On the phone with me right now, I've got Mickey Kipler, original member of the Rockin' Rebels, joining me at KVMR FM. Good evening, Mickey.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Tell me, where was it that you grew up?
Myself and my twin brother grew up in South Buffalo.
What was it like growing up in South Buffalo, say, in the 50s?
I'll tell you, it was a great area to grow up in. I mean, things to do every day, and it was a city neighborhood, and you could play baseball and in the season football and touch football, and then there was a swimming pool nearby that you could go, a public pool, of course, that you could go every day. And boy, I loved growing up there. It was a great place to grow up, a lot of things to do.
How did you get interested in music?
Well, I'd always been interested in music, like watching TV and collecting records and things like that and watching groups on TV. And then myself and my brother, we actually formed a club, like one of those neighborhood clubs that they did a lot back then, and we called it the Panther Club, right? So we used to meet at each other's houses. We had about, I think, about six guys in the club, and then the meetings got to be a little boring. I mean, you'd do the same thing, so you'd go to one guy's house and have discussions and what to do in terms of activities and stuff like that. But then it got rather boring, like I said, and someone came up with the idea. It may have been myself or my brother. I don't recall. It was a long time ago, but to form a band. So each one in the club picked an instrument that they'd want to play and take lessons on and go after. So I picked the saxophone, my brother picked the guitar, then we had a couple other guys. One guy picked the drums, another guy picked the bass. And at any rate, myself and my brother were the only ones that continued on with it, and that's how we initially started forming the group.
Who were the members of the original Rockin' Rebels?
Okay, well, my brother played guitar, and I played saxophone. So we needed a drummer, and we needed another rhythm guitar. Actually, I don't know that many people are aware of it, but on the record that we did, there was no bass on there. It was just lead guitar and rhythm guitar.
Hmm.
So my brother had been studying at a music store in Lackawanna, New York. Well, he asked the guitar teacher, could you recommend someone? And he recommended Paul Balin. He was taking lessons there as well. So then we got together with him, and he was the rhythm guitar player in our group. And then we went to Our Lady of Victory Elementary School. Well, Father Baker, it's kind of a home for wayward boys, and there was a kid there that played drums, Tom Gorman, and we got together with him. In fact, we rehearsed there in the boys' gym. That's where we started putting the band together.
So then it was the four of you, and you started practicing. How old were you at that time?
Oh, let's see, about 14, 15.
So you guys were, what, playing some of the standards of the day?
Yeah, and in fact, I recall we used to play like the high school dances. You know, we'd go around playing those and record hops, and the tunes of the day. One I recall was The Platters, Only You. We played that as a ballad. We didn't sing at that point, and all our records were instrumental. Later on, we got into vocals as they were required. I'm trying to think, the Guitar Boogie Shuffle, and then we did a lot of Duane Eddy tunes. We kind of patterned ourselves after Duane Eddy's group, and we did all of his tunes because the instrumentation was right. He had guitar and then saxophone solos. So we kind of like did that for a long period of time.
And to clarify that, in fact, you were calling yourselves the Rebels.
Yes, we were. We were calling ourselves the Rebels. In fact, Tom Gorman, the drummer, came up with that name. So we were calling ourselves the Rebels, and it kind of presented a little problem later on in our careers as we went on the American Bandstand, the Dick Clark Show. Well, Duane Eddy, his group was Duane Eddy and the Rebels. So ultimately, we had to wind up changing that to the Rockin' Rebels.
How did you meet Tom Shannon?
We were at a record hop, playing at a record hop at Baker High School, and he was the DJ running the hop, if you will. So he would play some records, and then in his off time, well, you'd have the live group. I mean, we did a ton of record hops, and that was a big thing years ago. You'd have a live DJ, but then a live group as well. So during his breaks, we would play, and that's where we met Tom Shannon.
Tom Shannon was a DJ in Buffalo and had a program. He started around 1958. He had a jingle that was done by the Russ Hallett Trio.
Right.
Did you ever have any contact with the Russ Hallett Trio?
No, I did not, but I do know what the story was. Russ Hallett had come up with that jingle, that KB Radio, which later became Wild Weekend, the instrumental version of that. Russ Hallett wrote that, and Tom Shannon used that as a sign-on theme, and sign off things. So when we were at this record hop, doing a record hop at Baker where we had met Shannon, we were doing things like Short Shorts instrumentally and Red River Rock. You remember that tune?
Right, Johnny and the Hurricanes.
Johnny and the Hurricanes, right. And things of that genre. We were doing things like that. And then Shannon heard us do Short Shorts, and he said, gee, would you guys be interested in recording that? And what the B-side was, it escapes me. I don't know what we were going to put on the B-side. But at any rate, he had a studio downtown Buffalo. We went down there, all set to record Short Shorts and something else on the B-side. While we were in the studio, my brother started fooling around with that opening guitar riff, that bump, 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 bump. You're familiar with it.
Right.
And then I came in playing the melody. I mean, we're just goofing around, so to speak. And then Shannon's ears perked up, and his manager, Phil Todaro, they both suggested, why don't we record this? Now, there was an issue, and they were worried that it wouldn't get airplay, being that it was Shannon's theme song. So the flip side, to counter that, if you will, we put Wild Weekend Cha-Cha. So one way or another, they'd have to play either the Cha-Cha version or the rock and roll version.
They were stuck.
They were stuck, exactly. So it was done by design. So we recorded that, and it was just a fluke, Brian. I mean, the first week or so, it sold locally here over 12,000 copies. Then it was picked up nationally by Swan Records out of Philadelphia for national distribution, and then it really took off after that.
But when you first recorded that song, it was actually released on Shannon and Todaro's Marley. Right.
Marley was the label, Marlee.
When that release was done, it wasn't the time that it sold so many records. It was a little bit smaller of a hit, correct?
Yeah, it was a little bit smaller of a hit, and then I believe then Swan got involved. When Swan got fully involved in it, they re-released it. There was a second issue, and it was released on the Swan label. And then with that, it had a resurgence and sold a lot of copies again, both combined. I mean, it was a million seller.
Before it was released on Swan, you actually recorded a couple more records for the Marlee label. Then.
Yeah, we recorded the theme from The Rebel. Do you remember that Nick Adams show?
Right.
The Rebel. That and Any Way You Want Me, that Elvis Presley ballad.
Mm-hmm.
He had a vocal version. Well, we did that as an instrumental. And then once we got hooked up with Swan Records, we went to Philadelphia and recorded a couple more as well. I mean, done with the success of Wild Weekend, obviously, but we did do a couple of recordings in Philadelphia, too, at Swan Records Studio.
Do you remember which recordings those were?
Yeah, it was Buffalo Blues and Donkey Walk.
There's a rumor that you also recorded a couple songs called Buffalo Twist and Crazy Weekend. Do you remember any other recordings that you did that maybe didn't get put on vinyl?
No, we didn't record those. I don't know that we got into that, but there was cover groups that were sent out. See, what had happened, we weren't receiving our royalty checks. We weren't getting them, I mean, which was rampant back then. I mean, a lot of groups went through the same thing. But being young and unaware of legal ramifications, and you think you're going to get it, but ultimately it came to the point where we said, we're quitting. We're not going to go on like this and not be paid. And then they got some cover groups to record and go out as the Rockin' Rebels, and they did a few tunes. But the only tunes that we did the original Wild Weekend Cha-Cha, theme from The Rebel, Any Way You Want Me, Buffalo Blues, and Donkey Walk.
And that was it.
That was it. Anything else was not the original group.
The group that was not original, did you have any contact with them at all?
Well, I knew who they were. They were musicians from the Buffalo area, but we've never worked with them. I was aware of them and met them a few times.
Were they actually the Jesters?
It was the Jesters, and they had saxophone, Lee Markish on guitar, and I don't know who played drums, and I don't know who the drummer was.
Backing
Tony
up...
DiMaria, I think.
Ah.
Carl Siskel, those names come up.
Backing up just slightly, when you recorded Wild Weekend for the first time for Marlee, you did go to Bandstand just off of that, correct?
Yes, we did, and that was like in 1959 when it originally came out. Again, it was huge. It took off like a rocket, and then that got us on the Dick Clark American Bandstand show when it was out of Philadelphia.
One other point then, when exactly did that record get released?
Early or mid-1959 when it first came out.
So you were saying, too, that you eventually quit the group because you weren't being paid. What was the relationship like with Shannon in general?
Well, up until then, it was fine. We were too young. We couldn't even drive. So when we did these road trips, I mean, they drove us. We were too young to even drive. So they would drive us around to different, like, local communities. We'd go to Rochester, New York, and upstate New York, and record haps in the Southern Tier, and doing record haps every week, sometimes two a week, like Fridays and Saturdays. And the relationship was fine up until the point where we knew we weren't going to get paid. I mean, then it soured, I mean, for obvious reasons.
Have you had any contact at all with Tom Shannon since then?
Not really. I mean, over the years, I've seen him from time to time, like in restaurants, dining out, and that. There is ill will, ill feelings, but I mean, I'm not vocal with it. I mean, I'm cordial and say hello and things like that. His partner has since died many years ago, his manager.
Right.
And then actually when we had the record out, Brian, I mean, we went on tours as well with, I mean, big names we were part of, like rock and roll shows.
Mm-hmm.
On American Bandstand, I think Annette was on when we were on as well. She was on the show too. And then we'd go on tours. We were with Roy Orbison. We did a lot with Freddie Cannon, Bobby Rydell. In fact, we backed up Bobby Rydell when he came to Buffalo a few years ago. We were the musical contractors, and we had the group here locally to back him up. Bobby V, Curtis Lee. Remember Curtis Lee?
Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
Yeah. Him, Ray Peterson, a lot of artists.
What do you think was the most exciting show that you did during that time?
Well, it had to be hands down the American Bandstand experience. That was, really exciting.
So once you broke up, well, I don't know, maybe that's the wrong terminology. Once you stopped your association with Tom Shannon, what did you do from there?
Well, we continued to play. In fact, we would go into some clubs, and actually they tried to stop us from playing. I mean, get an injunction or whatever, but, I mean, they couldn't do that. And that's when they ultimately went with the cover groups, because we weren't going back with them. But they'd show up at venues that we'd be appearing at and playing at and actually try to stop us. And then he actually copyrighted the name, so we had to change the name after that. We couldn't use the Rebels.
Did you ever make any other recordings after that?
Yes, in fact, a DJ out of Rochester, Chris Beeler, he was going to do a CD and release it, and I haven't spoken with him, and we recorded it now. That kind of like died on the vine, and I don't really know why. We were going to do a remake of Wild Weekend and some other instrumental tunes. Remember Honky Tonk by Bill Doggett?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of our favorite tunes, too, back then, playing that as an instrumental. And he expressed an interest in maybe putting a CD out.
What about the group called the Sophisticats?
Wow, where did you dig up that information?
That's part of my job.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was us. That was we had to change the name, and we did a recording as the Sophisticats. We did an album with, in fact, it was Gorman, Tom Gorman on drums, but it was a different bass player. I think Dave Weistep played bass on that, myself and my brother, and then we had a couple vocals on that as well.
Was that just a local recording then?
It was a local recording, right.
Did you have any contact with some of the other related groups? And when I say related, we talked about the Jesters being on the LP that was released, but there's also some tracks by Big John Little, and Kathy Lynn and the Playboys actually did a side, but it was on a 45 that was released later on as the Rockin' Rebels, of course. But did you have any contact with those groups at all?
I knew who they were, and I knew the personnel in the group, but we never worked with them, nor did we have a steady contact with them. By the way, that Big John Little, now, do you remember the Rockin' Crickets?
Yes.
That was an instrumental that Shannon and Phil Todaro had out as well. But that was not us. We had nothing to do with that. I mean, we used to play that tune. That was part of our repertoire, but we didn't record that. That was Bill Purnell on saxophone, and I don't know the other personnel.
Big John Little, I think that they released a couple other things themselves, and they actually had an LP that came out in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to contact him, but I didn't know if you still knew who he was.
No.
Okay. From there, then, you've just been playing music ever since Wild Weekend?
Been playing music ever since, and kind of like doing the country club circuit and weddings and parties, things like that. And occasionally a club. I mean, we'll do clubs as well. I mean, that tune is still golden. You know, people love to hear that tune, and I can't even imagine how many times I've played it, but it always goes over, and people remember it, and, you know, I'm out and about, I'm on the road on business, and I hear it on radio stations. I mean, it's still getting airplay.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, is there anything else that you want to add to the interview that I may have missed?
No, actually, you did a good job, Brian, and I appreciate you calling, and, you know, if there's any other information I could provide, I'd gladly do that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mickey. I sure appreciate your time and sharing all this information about the Rockin' Rebels.
Thank you, Brian. It was a pleasure.